Hello and welcome to this week's podcast on children's religious education at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Palo Alto. I'm Joe Chi, a member of the church's CRE committee and a teacher educator at Foothill College.
And I'm Dan Harper, Assistant Minister of Religious Education.
Today we're going to talk about storytelling techniques to use in Sunday school. Dan, let me begin by asking you, why is it important for Sunday school teachers to be good storytellers?
Okay, I'm going to get to that in just a minute, but I just noticed, it seems like every time we record these podcasts, the preschool sends their children out to have recess. And so you might hear children screaming and yelling and ringing the bells on their tricycles as they rumble by. But anyway, okay, so you want to know about why should Sunday school teachers be good storytellers? So many of the curriculums that we use in Sunday school include stories as an essential part of the curriculum. And so that means that most Sunday school teachers will almost be forced to tell a story to a group of children at some point. So storytelling turns out to be one of the central acts of religious communities. We're constantly telling stories from our tradition.
What makes a good storyteller?
Well, a good storyteller makes the story come alive. It's almost like we're living out the story. And actually, I don't like some professional storytellers because I'm too aware that they're storytellers with a capital S. And instead of making a story a performance, I feel the best storytellers turn the story into a shared experience. They draw me into a community feeling. And so the best storytellers I know are all amateurs.
So maybe it's better that most of us Sunday school teachers are amateur storytellers.
I think so. It's more real.
Tell us how we amateurs might become better storytellers.
Well, I think it's a three-step process. First, get to know the story. Second, learn the story so you're comfortable with it. And third, tell the story and make it come alive.
How do we go about getting to know the story?
Well, I think you should read the story over at least a couple of times. And as you read the story the first time, read through it slowly and picture each scene in your mind's eye as if you're watching a video. And then as you read the story a second time, this time picture your audience in your mind's eye. Run a little mental movie in which you imagine how the children in your Sunday school class will respond to that story. And this way you get to know the story in of itself. And you get to know the story as you imagine it will be heard by the children in your class.
Now, the second step is to learn the story so that you're comfortable with it. How do we do that?
I think there's at least three approaches to learning a story. One, you can memorize it. Two, you can figure out how to tell the story from notes. Three, you can learn how to read it from a text so that it's engaging. And so probably the best way is the first way. The best way to learn a story is to memorize it. Now, I have a lousy memory, and I'm pretty much unable to memorize stories. But I've talked with people who do memorize stories, and this is what they tell me. Okay, so let's say it's Sunday, and you want to memorize a story for next week's Sunday school class. So you read that story out loud over and over until you can recite it out loud. Then you put it aside, and you review it in an hour, and try to recite it again. And then you let another hour go by and you review it again before you go to bed and then try to recite it again. And you sort of keep reviewing it over the course of the day. By now you've probably got it pretty well memorized. And then you make sure to recite that story at least once a day for the rest of the week. And every time you recite it, you will gain confidence and your telling of the story will become more natural. And actually, now that I think about it, and once I explain it this way, I think if I had the self-discipline to actually follow this advice, I could probably memorize the story myself. And I'm told that once you get used to memorizing things, the whole process goes much more quickly. It's really great when you can memorize a story, because you can make eye contact with the children, and it feels to them as though you're just speaking to them. Okay, so the second approach is to tell the story from notes. And I have done this frequently, and it works very well. Again, let's say it's Sunday, and you're getting ready for next Sunday's Sunday school class. You go over the story, break it down into scenes, just as though it's a play or a movie. You figure out who's in each scene. and what happens in each scene, and you sketch out an outline. Then you reduce this outline so that it will fit onto a 3-inch by 5-inch card. You tell the story out loud from the outline on the card, and then you check yourself against the printed story. Tell the story out loud from your 3x5 card a couple more times. And then the next day, you do this again. Tell the story from the 3x5 card, check it against the printed story. If possible, do it every day that week. You'll go into Sunday school the following Sunday with a firm grasp on the story. Now, this second approach probably takes more time at the beginning than the first approach. It takes time up front to make up that good outline. But then you don't have to be quite as disciplined for the rest of the week. So it's probably about the same amount of time, just spread out differently. Now, the third and last approach is to read the story from a text. This is my personally preferred approach. And I have to admit, it's really quite time-consuming to do it well. First, you read over the story, and I mean read it out loud. Keep reading it out loud until you're comfortable with the phrasing, until you know which words you want to emphasize, you know which words are tripping you up. You go to the dictionary, look up the words that confuse you. You look over where your voice needs to rise and where it needs to fall. Now go back over that text and mark out every little pause. If there's a word that trips you up, mark out your phonetic interpretation of it. You mark out the longer pauses. You underline where your voice gets louder. Figure out how to mark where your voice should get softer. So one of the best preachers I know is Jane Jepka, and she always reads from a text. And I have seen her sermon text, and it's got all kinds of marks all over it. That's what you got to do. So I think it's really quite hard to make a story come alive when you read it from a text. Often I wind up completely rewriting the story and putting it into my own words. Even if I just mark up an existing text, I always have to make little annotations with changes in wording. And then when you're reading, you have to be very conscious of looking up from the text so that you're making eye contact with every child around that circle. And you have to be willing to improvise from the text if you see the children are getting bored, or if you see that they aren't sure what you're talking about. So I think it's really very time-consuming to prepare a story by telling it from a text.
So which story preparation technique would you recommend for a new teacher?
I'd say whichever one makes you feel the most comfortable. Just be sure not to skimp on the preparation time. Allow yourself a good long time to prepare that story.
Now, lots of Sunday school curriculums have us read stories from picture books. How do you prepare to tell stories from picture books?
Well, reading a story from a picture book is actually quite difficult. Picture books are mostly meant to be read aloud to one or two children. So if you're reading a picture book to a group of children, you have to keep turning the book towards yourself so you can read it, and then turning it around so the group can see the pictures. So if I have to tell a story from a picture book to a group of children, I photocopy every page of the book, and then I might ask my co-teacher to show the pictures while I read from the photocopy. And sometimes that picture book is too small, so I might photocopy the illustrations and blow them up so they fit onto 11 by 17 inch ledger size paper, and that way the whole group will actually be able to see the pictures. So my younger sister is a children's librarian, and she has to read aloud from picture books all the time in story time at her library. And she makes up these beautiful felt board replicas of the illustrations from the picture books so she can create the illustrations on felt board while she's telling the story.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. They're really beautiful, and you can see them on her website, www.abbykingsbury.org. So this is a fabulous way to tell a story from a picture book. It's probably the best way. It's just that you have to be really artistically talented like my sister, and you have to have lots and lots of time. It's much easier to just make really big photocopies of the illustrations.
At our church, we've also scanned the photos in and projected them onto a screen occasionally.
Oh, and that works really well, too. That's another great way of doing it.
Okay, now that you've prepared the story, how do you go about telling the story?
Well, the main thing is to make the story come alive. And the way you do that is pretty straightforward. First of all, you got to be sure you talk slowly. A well-told story has a rhythmic feel to it. and it goes along at roughly a walking pace. Da-dum, da-da-dum, da-dum, da-dum, da-da-da-dum. So musicians would call this an andante tempo. If this is your first time telling a story, you're going to feel like you're talking way too slowly. But you really want this soothing walking pace because it will almost mesmerize the children in your group. And second, it's great if you can have different voices for the main characters. So most of us know the story of Little Red Riding Hood. And Joe, if I ask you without thinking what kind of voice the big bad wolf has, what would you say?
The wolf would sound like this.
Right. And Little Red Riding Hood would have this high, squeaky little girl's voice like this. And Grandma would sound sweet and put upon, like it's something a wolf would eat, and so on. So it's really easy to make up voices, and you pretty much know what the voices should sound like. And if you have voices for the main characters, it really makes the story come alive. The story also comes alive if you leave dramatic pauses, like this. There he was, standing at the edge of the cliff, when he felt someone behind him push. And then you leave that little pause or beat of time to build suspense. And you can pause after funny bits, so you give the kids time to laugh. Pauses in the right places can really make a story come alive. And then all the obvious things that you think about, you be dramatic, use appropriate gestures. You can even act the story out a little bit. Maybe you can use props. I'm not particularly good at using props myself, but I admire when other people do it. And above all, you just have to maintain eye contact with the children. When we talk to each other in our culture, we like to look each other in the eye. A well-told story feels as though someone is talking to you the way a friend would talk to you.
Have you ever completely lost the attention of the children while you're telling a story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens. It usually happens when I have not done enough advanced preparation. If I don't know a story well enough, I'll lose the rhythm of the story. And when that happens, you can just watch as the children's attention drifts away. If I hesitate a few too many times because I don't really know the story, next thing you know, the kids are all fidgeting, and then somebody hits someone else, and then I've lost them. And there are even times when you just have to abandon the whole thing and go do something else. So yeah, it happens.
Would you mind telling us a story so we can get an idea what a well-told story sounds like?
Sure. I'm not the greatest storyteller in the world, but I can at least demonstrate some of the things I've been talking about. This is the story of the fox and the fish from the Babylonian Talmud, tractate Berakoth 61b. Once upon a time, the wicked Roman government issued a decree. No more would the Jews be allowed to study the Torah and the law. But Rabbi Akiva seemed to ignore the decree. He gathered people together quite openly and taught them the Torah and the law. Pappas, son of Judah, took him aside and said, "Rabbi Akiva, do you know what could happen to you? Aren't you afraid the Romans will punish you?" "Let me tell you a story," said Rabbi Akiva. And he told this story. Once upon a time, there were many small fish who lived in a stream. One day, fox walked alongside the stream and noticed that all the fish were darting to and fro as if they were afraid of something. "Oh, fish, oh, fish," said fox, "why are you swimming around so? What is it that you are trying to escape?"
"We are trying to escape the nets that the humans have put in the stream to catch us," said the fish.
"Oh ho," said the fox, "then perhaps you should come up here and walk on dry land alongside me, just as your ancestors used to walk beside my ancestors years and years ago. That way you can escape from the nets of the humans."
"What? Go up on dry land?" said the fish indignantly. "You have a reputation for being smart, but that's a stupid thing to say. We may be afraid of what's going on here in the water, where we feel comfortable, but it would be much worse for us up in the thin air, where we would surely die."
And so the fish stayed in the water and did not try to walk beside the fox on dry land. Rabbi Akiva said, "Now you can see that we are just like the fish in the stream." Pappas asked the rabbi to explain. "It's like this," said Rabbi Akiva. "If we neglect the Torah, if we neglect what is central to our religion, we would be like fish out of water, and we would die. It is written in the Torah, 'For that is your life and the length of your days.' Perhaps we will suffer if we do study the Torah, but we know that we will surely die if we don't." Not long after that, the wicked Romans arrested Rabbi Akiva for teaching and studying the Torah. He was roughly thrown into the Roman prison, and there, to his surprise, he found Pappas. "Pappas, what are you doing here?" asked Rabbi Akiva. "Oh, Rabbi," said Pappas, "you were right. I have been thrown into prison for nothing important. At least you have been thrown into prison for something worth dying for." And when Rabbi Akiva was killed by the Romans, he died in peace with the words of the Torah on his lips.
I can hear how you set the rhythms, and I heard the way that you made different voices. I'm looking at the text you read from, and I can see how it's all marked up. I do have to say it's a pretty strange story.
Yeah, I guess it is kind of a strange story. It's one of those stories that really needs to be followed by a discussion afterwards.
You're right, it is. Now, that being the case, let's talk about how to lead a good discussion in the next podcast.
Okay.
That's it for this week's podcast on children's religious education at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Palo Alto. Thanks for listening. We welcome listeners' comments. Send us your thoughts and feedback by email or post a comment on our blog at paloaltocre.wordpress.com.
I'm Dan Harper, Assistant Minister of Religious Education.
And I'm Joe Chi, a member of the church's CRE committee and a teacher educator at Foothill College. Take care and be well.